Hey everybody. Welcome to the Left of Straight Show interviews, where we talk to celebrities and personalities from entertainment, foodies, books, music, and advocacy. Whether an LGBTQ ally or just a little left of straight, we're here to get the conversation going.
Welcome back, friends. Today, I have the honor of viewing Matt Skalerud in studio with me. Matt's a prominent figure in our LGBTQ plus media landscape. As president of Pink Media, Matt has spearheaded cutting-edge strategies to reach and engage with our LGBTQ plus audience for almost 30 years now, while also tirelessly working to elevate and amplify our LGBTQ plus voices on a global scale. His dedication to advocacy and empowerment has made a significant impact on our community, and I'm honored to have him in my circle of social online friends. From working on boards on behalf of LGBTQ Travel, our LGBTQ Business Chamber of Commerce, to making time for travel with his husband and nights on the town or game night with friends, Matt is truly living his best LGBTQ life and helping the rest of our community.
Well, hello, welcome to I Love Gay Today. And we're in Brooklyn, New York today. We're going to have some fun. We're here with Zachary Zane. How are you, Zachary?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Fantastic. I was looking forward to connecting with you, but primarily because everywhere I turned, whether it was on Twitter, whether it was on, kind of finding articles out there about LGBT life, it's like you kept popping up. And I was like, who is this guy? Colorado, good. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing super well today. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's so much great to connect with you. And I love your byline on social media, advocate, writer, and storyteller. That tells it all, doesn't it?
It sure does.
But what we're going to chat about, she's come out with a new book, and we're going to talk more about that and everything behind it. But what's fun is that you and I have been connected on LinkedIn and so forth for quite a while, because you're in the LGBTQ digital marketing world, and it based out of Denver.
I moved to the city a few years before that and wanted to write a book about Stonewall. So that was kind of my initial purpose. And surprisingly, there wasn't really a walking tour that existed that kind of covered the breadth and the depth of everything that we talk about on our Village Pride tour. So when I was doing my own research for the book, I figured it might be a little bit more accessible to folks to just put that in a walking tour format, as opposed to writing a book, which is a very lengthy process, which, you know, it's still a work in progress, but the walking tour just made it super accessible for folks to be able to learn about some of this history. And that was really the inspiration, was making this history accessible for folks.
Well, that's really cool.
Well, Matt Skalerud, welcome back to Left of Straight Show interviews. How are we doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited. I'm honored that you've had me back after, that means we must have done okay that first time.
It's been a hot minute. I mean, we've been known each other for a long time now. I had you on back quite a while ago. Then I took a couple years off during the pandemic. Yeah. And you were so kind to have me on your show last year. But yeah, it's just great getting to connect in person like this virtually, right?
It is. And I enjoy what we have in common, which is just helping other people kind of get their story and tell their story out there. And that's something that will keep me connected to you for a long time.
Exactly. Can you believe you've been doing this 30 years now? I mean, we started as an engineer, and now you're just pioneering this landscape and helping other businesses go. Talk about that journey a bit. It's got to be a little crazy to look back on.
It's starting to make me feel old now. So, but no, it's just funny because, it's just been... I started in 95, started a gay website that I thought everybody was going to do it. And that was kind of leaving my other world behind, which was I went from engineering to being a sales engineer, which just means I love technology, but I love telling people about it and trying to find solutions. And so when the internet came along and we started gaywire.com, that's the main reason we succeeded. I didn't have to be the best programmer or the best salesperson, but I understood technology and I knew how to go out behind and outside of the computer and just talk to people about what this new internet was about. And really, it's been a wonderful journey ever since.
It's got to be interesting to look on both the outside and the inside, because you've seen it evolve from, like you said, Gaywired and everything back in the day was chat rooms, AOL and things like that,
yeah,
to watching magazines flourish, to now seeing print going away and seeing online start to flourish, and being behind that technology, but also being a user of it. So it's got to be kind of a interesting journey, right?
It really has. And that's where, you know, I feel very fortunate that, I mean, I know I put myself in that position, but I'm fortunate that we were able to succeed early on, and it allowed me to just kind of do something that every Sunday night when I'm watching TV with my husband, I'm sitting there thinking about, wow, I'm excited for Monday and I'm excited for the week to start, which tells me that I've made the right choices even today. But yeah, it's really evolved. From, I would say, the big picture is that we got ourselves connected for the first time worldwide in a way that hadn't been done before when the internet came along. But the biggest shift over the last 10, 15 years is that we went from just being connected to being able to collaborate, engage, and share ideas. And I think that is revolutionary. And I think that has changed the world more than, or at least on par with what the internet did for us almost 30 years ago.
Now, you're very much the face of the company now, and you do a lot of the outside events and everything. Are you still able to kind of dip the toes back into the technology from time to time, or do you kind of let other people handle that now?
Yeah, yes and no. I would just say that with technology, I used to do a ton of programming. I'll age myself again by saying that the language I fell in love with at the time was Cold Fusion, which I don't think very many people even use anymore. But but the reality is that the need for creating a website or a network of websites as this hub for a media company, I don't feel like it's as necessary anymore. So if I was still very strong on the website side, I'd probably just end up using WordPress or some of the other tools that mean that you don't have to really have to know much about programming. But right. for us, most of it is moved from the website out into the whole social media and that engagement and posting there, which then takes away from the need to program and really focuses much more on trying to understand the dynamics of how it all really works together.
Right. And I think that's what you've taught me the most, and you're very good at it. You said that two key elements, I think, is actual storytelling, making sure a story gets told, and then flipping the script and talking at them or with them and not at them, right? Yeah. So you need to be on the other side of the camera and kind of engaging with your audience and talking like that. Talk about those two strategies and how they work in tandem.
Well, that's kind of the magic. That's the trick is that once you go from, and the problem is that most marketers still see themselves as just simply they've got their own company or they work for a company and they are there just to put press releases out and put ads out and just talk to and at people without any real consideration for who's on the other side. But in today's world, in order to be able to make those things work, you really have to shift that from a more human-centric point of view, which is not only realizing there's somebody on the other side, but engaging with them and sharing some of their content. So if you're a company and you have fans of your anything, your product, your clothing, sharing some of those stories. If you're a destination and you have people descending upon your destination for Pride festivals, engage with and share some of their activity and their stories. So it's like, but most folks aren't really thinking that. They're just looking at pushing their stuff out there and just hoping for the best. And so I always tell them, especially if you don't want to spend a lot of money on advertising and you really want to be able to leverage the network you have to turn that script. You have to turn it into a two-way street, be engaged with the folks. And then you start getting, basically they start paying attention to you in a whole new way.
And that's what I'm excited about for the road trip, which we'll talk about in a minute, is actually getting out there and talking to the people and seeing the other side of it. I mean, I try to do it as much as I can on social media, but of course, Northeast Ohio is not the entertainment hub of the universe right now. So it's going to be nice to kind of take that trip back out to California.
Yeah.
What are some of your most innovative strategies you think Pink Media has been able to implement in getting the audience out there effectively?
Well, it started, I would say, when we kind of broke away from just your traditional banner ads and email campaigns, we started to work with these newfound influencers. It came out, what has it been, almost 10 years now, but especially in the travel world, folks that were acting like a media entity, and kind of crossing over into the world of journalism, but they had their own audience and they were creating their own content with a whole new style. And then, you know, and it started with MySpace and Facebook, and now we're in Instagram Reels, and TikTok is kind of the dominant space. So early on, like about 10 years ago, we started working with some of those folks on behalf of destinations and food festivals and others, kind of matching them up, helping to kind of put a business angle to some of the work, and also making sure that the influencers were getting paid, because a lot of influencers were not getting paid at that time. But that, even that business model has kind of faded in that sense. The destinations know how to reach the influencers. They've all got these great relationships, and you know, for lack of putting it any other way, they don't really need us as much for that anymore. So now our job is much more working with destinations or food festivals or any other company, and understanding that they have all this content, whether it's their own content, influencer content, or even user-generated content that's floating around out there. And we know how to kind of bring that together and leverage it on behalf of a client and make it so that it's kind of a win-win for both. But that seems like the direction that things are really going, is that merging of storytelling by lots of us individuals, and then being able to turn that into some sort of form of advertising.
Do you have a particular success story through all of your incarnations that kind of brings a little happy smile to your face, of something that really has worked well that you really were excited about at the time?
I think so. I mean, we have two areas. Like, one of them, when there was a book release, there was a book release recently out of his name is Saleh Bashir, out of Toronto, but he was very well known in the Toronto area and Canada overall. So we worked with him because he had put out the press release, got it out through Yahoo News and all these places. But at the end of the day, LGBT folks that might have an interest in his story really weren't seeing it. So it was kind of fun to work with him, because it was a very clear definition of what we were tasked to do, which is, let's make sure that this is getting out there to the right audience. And so it kind of tapped into our world of taking storytelling and then getting it out there in a targeted fashion all throughout social media. And so working with him was great on a book, but then destinations have also, especially with Palm Springs, where you're going here in a few months. And Palm Springs has also kind of worked with us over the years to do a very similar thing, getting those stories, getting the Pride Festival content, or they've always got some story going on a regular basis. And for us to kind of find, identify those, get them out there to an LGBT audience that enjoys, you know, travel to Palm Springs, and then bringing in the tourism offices of both Palm Springs and the kind of greater Palm Springs area, and kind of weaving them into the story as well.
Very nice. I really appreciate you introducing me to Saleh. He does have an interesting story. I mean, he has just the background of his beautiful house when I was interviewing was just, he has such a great art collection, and just, he's done so much over his time. So yeah, such a great story to help get out there. And I appreciate you kind of introducing us.
Absolutely.
Now, you talk about travel, and you were on some boards I talked about in the interview, and you and your hubby travel a lot. Is it always a treat, or does it become a bother after a while? Or talk about some of your favorite destinations and some of the not so favorite ones.
Yeah, well, it used to be more work related, especially when I was on the board with IGLTA. And so, you know, there was it was wonderful that you'd get whisked away to these far-flung places, to Curacao and to Barcelona, and you're like, wow, what a life. But it also was work. But a lot of that is my husband and I have kind of phased some of that out. And now because he's able to first work remotely. And so we're able to run off to Thailand or Venice for maybe 2 weeks at a time or longer, and he can work remotely and I'm doing my thing and keeping my work going. But at the same time, we carve out these time slots, especially because he's working US hours, so that we can really enjoy the destination as well. And so we've been doing that more and more often. And we were recently in Singapore and Thailand, which I'd never been to Singapore, but Thailand, and, you know, we love to eat. So the food in a place like that is very high on our list. And so we're just going to continue to do that this year as well.
As a fellow foodie, I love your adventures. I follow along on all the social media, and I get hungry just looking at some of the places you've explored. And it's got to be kind of nice. It's almost like having a couple little mini honeymoons a few times a year, right? It's got to be a great place to reconnect.
I am very spoiled, and I don't take it for granted. And but yeah, and in fact, this year is IGLTA is going to be in Osaka, Japan in October. And so my husband is actually putting together a longer Japan trip that he can really partake in. And then of course, we'll spend a few days at IGLTA and then go back out and exploring Japan again. So that's kind of the way we like to try to balance it out and do it nowadays.
I need to find my way to Japan. I've had lots of friends that have fallen in love with it every time they've gone. I haven't been there yet, but I haven't heard a bad word about it from any of my friends that travel there. I have two people I know that want to move there. I know four people that have moved there.
Yeah.
What, in your mind, with all your traveling, what is maybe a favorite LGBTQ destination people might want to try, and just a regular destination in general they might want to try they might not have thought of?
Yeah, I should have favorites. I'm one of those pain in the neck people that thinks that I love so many places in the world because they're all so different. But really, some of my real favorites. Puerto Vallarta has really risen to the way up there because it's so easy when you go there, and of course we're a little spoiled in the sense that it's really catering towards a North American audience, whether it's or traveler, and especially gay. So you go there. And you get one experience, and the Atlantis cruise shows up, and it lets all of thousands of gay men off into Puerto Vallarta, and then the whole scene changes, and it's just like it's a massive party scene, which I may have aged out of a little bit. So for me, I prefer the lower key, but the food is great, the bar world, the nightclub world, and everything is it really makes it fun. And also still going to Palm Springs. And Palm Springs used to cater to a much older crowd, but ever since the pandemic, the average age has actually gone down quite a bit because so many people from LA, San Francisco, they left for Palm Springs temporarily to kind of ride out the storm. And then they realized, wow, I can work remotely more often, and I can actually buy my house and live here, and I could live here and still enjoy a lot of what I thought I was going to enjoy just as a LGBT senior.
Yeah, as a bear of a certain age, I'm definitely looking at Palm Springs as a destination for at least part-time. And like you said, it has skewed a little younger, but it's great. It's a two-hour drive into L.A. You can kind of pick your time where the traffic is not quite as bad, and it kind of works really well. So I really do enjoy that aspect of Palm Springs. Great LGBTQ culture, great food city again as well. So always nice. And Puerto Vallarta, I'm just impressed with the entertainment. They've just up their game in entertainment year after year for the past 5 or 6 years. So great choices. Talk about, like, as a leader in LGBTQ media, what advice would you give to inspiring advocates to make a difference in the community? If someone was trying to do some well in the community, what's some of the best outlets to do that for right now that you see?
I'm just a big fan of kind of going back to what I was saying before, because I see a lot of advocacy, LGBT advocacy going on online. And even though Twitter is kind of a bad word nowadays, the reality is that when it comes to, especially when you see folks in other countries, like whether it's in Mexico and especially Mexico right now, but for some reason, a lot of advocacy is happening on Twitter/X, but they've learned how to really work with each other and then amplify each other's message. So what you'll see is, like, if there's a really major event or cause or something going on, they'll really all band together. They'll be able to kind of strategize about where to go. They know how to do it. And then they know how to really make sure to get that message out so a lot of people see it. And it's in a way that you really can't do. Like, if they were just posting on Facebook, Instagram, and so forth, I probably would have no clue what they're up to in that way. And, but you're seeing a lot of that here in the US as well, just differently. So in the US, you'll have GLAAD, HRC, and so forth, who are strongly leveraging that because there's a reason for it, because they really want to get their message out there to a much wider audience than they can just on Facebook and Instagram. But others have left because they didn't want to be a part of the hate and the increase in negativity that they're finding out there. And so, you know, we don't ever tell people or even give opinions on whether they should be there or not. We just know that for us, And especially on the advocacy side, we're seeing that that's the strongest place. And I think it's going to be very strong this year politically for a lot of, it already has started out that way, but politically, even without Trump's voice out there on there, which is a blessing. You just see so much activity of people being able to get their points out there and reaching many, many, many thousands of people.
It has become that kind of dual-edged sword. I mean, at first it was giving a place to connect, right? We didn't have all these places to connect more, even broader throughout the community. Your same state, you couldn't find some, maybe your same LGBTQ tribe, so to speak. Yeah. So you were able to use the power of social media to connect with other people. But then, like you said, some people brought the hate into it and things like that. So it's much more of a balancing act these days, but.
It is. It is. I tend to ignore, and I don't ignore as just as a personality trait of mine. It's a strategy, because if you ignore it, it doesn't typically get any legs. It doesn't get any momentum out there, because the all those algorithms for what you see in the newsfeed are really skewed towards, you know, the moment somebody trolls me and I respond back, Twitter or any other social media says, oh, look, they're engaged with each other. They may not like each other, but look at that. And next thing you know, everybody you're connected to starts to see that fight. And if you don't want people you're connected to see it, you have to just ignore it. And the trolls know that, because they, I can tell you 100% of the time, eventually they just drift away, because there's nothing there to be gained. And they realize that.
I think that's key. I mean, you and I talked, I think, when Threads first started emerging about it. And the first month was just a beautiful bliss of getting to know each other, and nobody really found it yet. And now I'm getting like 50 requests a day to say hi to me. And I could employ someone full time just to hit the block button, because, like you said, you don't want to engage with them. They'll say hi, cutie, and things like that. And it's like, you can't engage, but it's like lock central. It's a crazy time now in Threads, but I still think it's a relatively good channel now. Do you like Threads still, or do you kind of?
No, I do. It's just a channel. The problem is it hasn't really broken out into anything unique or special. It's still, I consider myself kind of a, you know, for lack of a better word, especially on Twitter, a power user, where I know how to really kind of make things work and perform. And on Threads, it doesn't have a lot of the tools available yet to be able to really make things perform. So on the servers, it looks the same and acts the same as Twitter, but it doesn't have that same power. And it's getting there, it's growing. And, you know, that's what we're all looking for, is something, you know, a platform where we can get our message out to the right people. But it's still relatively small in terms of what I see on other social media.
Gotcha. Let's talk about bringing yourself more out in front there. We started your YouTube channel for I Love Gay Today. Yeah. Such great people. I mean, I have trouble finding guests 8 years into this and everything, not getting the same people over and over. You find some amazing guests. I love watching this. Talk about that experience, how it's been to kind of connect with these people, how it's been to host. What's been your excitement part, and what's been your challenges in it?
Well, first of all, I don't think you have any problem finding guests. You interview a lot of interesting people and folks that I've never even connected to or seen. And I think that's why you and I kind of bounce off each other well, in terms of being able to even recommend folks, because I will tell you that the majority of people that we interview are those that we're engaged with on social media. So going all the way back again to what we were talking about, when you're engaged with them, not only are they seeing the show, but they know who we are, what we represent, how we can help them. And so then they become very eager to be able to, not only be on the show, but they're also better at being able to then share their episode with their network. Right. And as opposed to, like, I also get now a lot of PR agencies that will pitch me as a media company to do their interviews. And some of them really love that. But some of those interviews kind of end up being a dead end, because the person I'm interviewing, maybe there's no real connection there. They don't really know exactly who or what I represent. And then at the end of the day, sometimes they don't even know how to like share it with their audience. They just expect that this was just like a magazine or a TV show, and they just got themselves out there. So it's kind of less rewarding. And so the way we find them is through that engaged world of social media. And And it really allows us to kind of increase the level of relationship as well.
Yeah, same, my friend. I mean, I've been doing this for 8 years now. People say, why aren't you monetized? And all this other stuff. Because I want to interview who I want to interview. I want to talk about who I'm interested in talking about. So I'm able to curate that a little more. And I really enjoy being able to, back 8 years ago, 8.5 years ago when I started, social media was the way to really interact because LGBTQ celebrities and stuff weren't getting noticed by mainstream press as much. So they were very receptive on social media. Yeah. And now it's still my favorite thing. And like I said, I find some great people just seeing social media out there and finding a new person I may never have heard of before. So I really enjoy getting to talk to people like that. So I understand how rewarding that is. What looking ahead, what are you guys looking, Peak Media is always evolving and doing different things. What do you see in the future right now for the company?
Well, it really seems that things have kind of settled out. We've kind of went from, you know, because we work with clients to try to help reach their LGBTQ demographic online. And it's been a real shift over the years from just the traditional advertising, banner ads, and even email, into much more where we're at today, which is storytelling, whether it is written word, videos, and then getting those out in the right, in front of the right channels. So that seems to have kind of matured and finally kind of got come into its own. And so now we're just kind of spearheading that straight through, making sure that more and more companies understand, you know, that the world of storytelling and PR and all that has kind of merged with advertising in the realm of social media, and that we're just one of the companies that in the LGBT space, at least, we want to always kind of position ourselves as being one of the best, one of the experts, and just kind of focusing and being able to really get an LGBTQ message out there to the right folks.
And I'm sure you have the fingers on the pulse there. Who do you see, what LGBTQ companies are really kind of doing really well right now?
Yeah.
That have just, you've seen really take advantage of all the things that you teach to your clients and everything. Who's doing it really well out there right now?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, you're seeing it. It's all across the board. You're finding that a lot of the traditional media companies, I mean, they may not work with me directly, but I feel like, you know, we all kind of influence each other in some way, shape, or form. And so you're finding, number one, like with the folks at The Advocate and Out, you're starting to see that they're pivoting a much more towards video as opposed to their written word. So they're really putting a lot of emphasis on the Advocate channel and trying to get that out on connected TVs. And it's exciting to watch some of that. So because they also leverage social media as part of their mix in a way that is different than what we do. But at the same time, the crossover is just understanding content and how to get that out in front of the right folks. And even Q Digital is doing the same thing. They're doing a pretty good job as well in a very similar fashion.
Yeah, I do see the evolution. Out Magazine especially, I've always been on their mailing list, and now they've kind of made it more newsletterish and give you a little more in-depth and adding that different media elements to it. So yeah, I think that they're kind of are stepping up their game there. And it's been around a long time, so it's great to see that evolution and kind of working with the times there. Well, I touched on Big Gay Road Trip. This is the second time that Pink Media has partnered with me, my media partner, kind of gave me a little advice behind the scenes. I appreciate that. One of the big powerhouses of Pink Media, of course, is your amazing LGBTQ hashtag. I mean, people may not have heard of Pink Media, but they've heard of I Love Gay XYZ, right? So talk about who first came up with that kind of campaign, and talk about, it's taken on a life of its own, I can imagine, right?
Yeah, we've exceeded 1.5 million followers in this network of a little bit over 200 profiles, and now it's on its way to 2 million. And but we saw it, you know, now that Twitter gives us a birthday announcement, the majority of the profiles are actually 7 years old now. And so, but we started probably like about 10 years ago, just started to see a way that these profiles were able to work together. And then the algorithm, the newsfeed, started to really evolve and change, and it got better as well. So we've been very active on everything, whether it was Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn, and kind of growing with all those. But what we really found is that the powerhouse when it comes to getting a story out there, getting a client story out there, working within this kind of like new media type of format and the reason I say new media, because typical media.
Well, that wraps up another great interview here on Left of Straight Show Interviews. You can also peek into the lighter side of our guests on our bonus podcast, 5 Questions With, every Tuesday, with guests from our previous week. Until next time, be sure to like, subscribe, tell your friends, and visit us at www.leftofstraightpodcasts.com for contests, fun, and more.